It is Your Money, and I'm Susie Jones, and we are so happy to have you with us today as we talk about the best way to work with a financial advisor. As always, our friend Bruce Helmer is on the news line. Bruce is the founder of Wealth Enhancement Group and the host of this big show, and he is a financial advisor. Hello there. How are you, Bruce?
Hello, Susie Jones. I'm well, and I trust you are well also?
I am indeed. I wonder if we're going to check in and see where Peg is.
Yeah, our new weekly segment entitled Where's Peg Today? Peg is actually in Vienna, Australia
today. Oh, wonderful. What a wonderful thing. That's great.
So we're all living vicariously through Peg's European travel experience.
Exactly. Well, good for her, as you say. Pretty important to have someone to work with, is it not?
Yeah, let me preface this. Thank you, Susie, and thank you, listeners, for being with us. The first thing that a lot of people might think when I talk about working with a financial advisor, and it might be cynical people or it might just be regular people, they would look at me and say, well, you can't be objective. You're a financial advisor. Of course you think people should work with a financial advisor. But there's a lot of statistical data. No one should take my word for it on this. You can go on the internet, whatever your search engine is. You can go to ChatGPT. There is a ton of evidence out there that suggests that people that work with a financial advisor are more financially successful than those that don't. And that's net of cost, because obviously an advisor gets paid for what they do. And we'll talk a little bit about that also, the different ways that advisors can be paid. But an advisor that you work with for any length of time should be able to demonstrate to your satisfaction that you're better off with them than without them, even if you pay them for their services. So, Susie, originally the things we're going to talk about today, I had kind of scripted to be a couple of different shows. But my marketing team convinced me, this is really all one topic. We think we can, talk about all these things in one show. So I'll try to do that today, and also still leave time, before we're done today for listeners to get involved and ask questions. But again, I can't be objective. I admit that. But I would also tell people part of the reason I chose the career I did is one of the things I know about myself, my core values, is that I get great enjoyment, great reward, great satisfaction out of being able to help other people somehow. And I'm absolutely convinced that what I do helps people. And yes, I'm compensated financially, but the emotional rewards I get helping people, I think for me, are practically as valuable and important as any financial compensation that I get. And I know that sounds hokey, but it's actually true in my case, and I think it's true of most of the advisors at Wealth Enhancement. So let's again, people can do their own research. They can use their own search engine. They can ask ChatGPT. But let me talk a little bit about some of the data that's out there about advisors adding value and who's researched this. So a 2026 study from TIAA found that advisors, people that use an advisor, report stronger saving habits, greater confidence, higher wealth compared to non-advice participants. Vanguard has estimated that behavioral coaching alone may add 1 to 2% a year to investors' return on investment just by helping their clients avoid emotional mistakes. So Vanguard, the TIAA Institute, many others, there's all kinds of data out there that advisors can add value. I've actually kind of quantified, and I'll go through this quick if people want to write it down or take notes, five different ways that an advisor can add value. Number one, investment in portfolio value. A good advisor can help the client construct a portfolio that's diversified and appropriate for their goals, objectives, time horizon, consistent with their core values, their risk tolerance. And so we say all the time on this show, Susie and listeners, that no two people are exactly alike. We're snowflakes. We're all different. And so we devise portfolios, and good advice, not just Wealth Enhancement, but good advisors will help determine what's an appropriate portfolio for you. I've said this many times on the show, but if you ask a lot of people, what's your risk as an investor, or some variation of that, or excuse me, what's your goal as an investor, many people will give some variation of the answer, I want to get the highest return I can. But I don't believe that's true. I think to get the highest return that you can, might mean that you have to take a lot more risk than you're comfortable taking or that you should take. So when we look at it, we always say, what is the rate of return that this client needs to fulfill their goals and objectives? What age do they want to retire? How much income do they want at retirement? We can do some future value forecasting and some cash flow analysis, and we can actually determine the rate of return that you need to get where you want to be when you want to be there. And then we devise portfolios that we think will earn you that rate of return and do it with the least amount of risk possible, because I don't believe in taking on unnecessary risk to get returns that you don't need. So number one, how an advisor can add value, investment and portfolio value. Number two, behavioral coaching, saving people from themselves. So often, and I think back to 2008, and most of our listeners still remember 2008, how much the market was down. We had virtually a global economic panic, and people were, my clients also were coming in for review meetings saying, I got to get out of the market. You got to get me out of the market. It's plummeting. And I'm like, well, you really think it's a good idea to get out of the market now after it's gone down so much? But that's a fear reaction. That's an instinctive reaction. And on some level, maybe it's even logical, but it's actually not. So when you look at 2008, I don't remember the exact numbers, but in the fall of 2007, the Dow was trading at a little bit over 14,000. And by March of 2009, just a year and a half later, it was 6,000 and something. It was down some 60%. And so I understand why people were nervous and why they wanted to sell out of the market. But we convinced our clients to stay the course, think long term. No one had, even though they had less money on paper, nobody had to change their lifestyle because they had safe money and they could use cash or the safe money for their lifestyle needs, for their income. They didn't have to sell stocks at an inopportune time, which is also part of, appropriate portfolio diversification. And in fact, a lot of my clients that had more safe money or short-term money or cash than they needed, I said, hey, maybe it's a good time to put more in the market. And some people looked at me like I was crazy. What do you mean, put more in the market? It's going down like a rock. And I'm like, but it's on sale. It's selling at a lot less than what it was. And history tells me that it will come back. Well, where's the Dow today? The Dow is at, 53,000 or whatever the closing number was on Friday. So if you stayed the course in 2008, or if you did what a lot of my clients did and actually put money into the market when it was down and didn't panic and didn't react with fear, you did really, really well since 2008. So saving people from themselves, having a plan, sticking with the plan, and not letting fear or greed or emotion impact decisions, it's hard to quantify the value. Firms like Vanguard have tried to do it. And again, they say 1% to 2% average per year return on investment just by helping people make good decisions. So number three, financial planning. In addition to portfolio management, what does your financial advisor do? We help clients, Susie, with retirement projections, spending strategies, when to take Social Security, how to reduce taxes, Roth conversion decisions. We help them with Medicare, health care, insurance, funding education, their charitable giving. We do the calculation for their required minimum distribution. How much do you need to take? Where's the best place to take it from? All these financial planning things. And again, it's hard to quantify exactly what the value is, but I know my clients would say those things are more important than the return on investment that they get on their portfolio. And yes, the return on investment matters, but the planning things, that the strategies that enhance everything, I think matter more, and it's what we call comprehensive planning. Number four, I'm giving ways that an advisor can add value. Number four, I'm calling confidence and clarity. You sleep better at night. You know how much you can spend and not run out of money because we did a forecast or a cash flow analysis. You're able to spend time doing other things, things you actually enjoy, traveling, spending time with family, spoiling your grandkids. You can do all these things because you've got somebody else to take care of the financial thing, and that kind of bleeds over into my fifth thing, time. Most people probably can't do financial planning as well as their financial planner does it. But even if you could, do you really want to? Is that how you want to spend your time in retirement? Don't you want to play golf? Don't you want to go fishing? Don't you want to travel? Don't you want to spend time with family and spoil your grand, you know, all those other things that are more fun and more important to do at retirement than worrying about money. So, five ways that an advisor can add value. Again, number one, investment portfolio value. Number two, behavior coaching. Number three, financial planning. Number four, confidence and clarity. Number five, you know, save you some time. So, again, I think, and we've tried on this show to talk more about the planning and the other things an advisor does, but I think the world, usually when you talk about financial planner or financial advisor, the first thing people think of is, well, it's their job to help me invest my money or predict what the stock market's going to do or to get me out of the market before it crashes if it's going to crash. Well, nobody can do that. Nobody knows what the market will do in the short term, and anybody that tells you otherwise is either misguided or dishonest. Anybody in this business that's good will tell you we don't know what's going to happen in the short term. But we can't, you know, just like a weatherman can't control the weather, we can't control the markets. But we can advise strategies to help people that whatever the markets do, you're still going to be financially successful. So we can help you answer questions like, are you saving enough? When can you retire? How much can you spend at retirement and not run out of money? When should you draw your Social Security? If you have multiple places to spend money from at retirement, where's the smartest place to take it? What are the risks that you possibly face that could derail your plan? Is it flexible? Is your plan flexible that we can adapt it if something happens, if life throws you a curveball? What do you do if the market goes down? What is your family prepared if something happens to you or life insurance? We look at all these things, and this is all subsets of comprehensive financial planning. It's not just what investment should I be in? What stock should I buy? So again, assuming that I've convinced the listener that a financial advisor can add value net of cost, then it's a good idea. And I recognize I probably haven't convinced everybody listening right now, and that's okay. Then the next question is, what's the best way to choose one? How do you find an advisor? And this is never going to be an exact science. And I think it's first of all, though, it's a good idea to interview multiple advisors. When I have people that come in and talk to me on an introductory meeting and they tell me they're going to talk to other advisors, I actually compliment them and I encourage that. And I'm not offended. I'm not defensive. I'm not insulted. I think it's actually a good idea. And of course, I hope ultimately they choose me. But if they don't, that's okay. I at least like that they're talking to more than one person. I think that's a good idea. I think at the end of the day, if you talk to multiple people, they might all sound great when you're talking to them. And unfortunately, to choose an advisor, you sort of have to take a leap of faith. Because you don't know if everything they're saying is really going to be the reality or not. Not that they would intentionally lie, but the experience you have just might not be as good as you thought it would be. So you can't really measure or test until you've made the decision, which is why I say clients or prospective clients kind of have to take a leap of faith. Well, then, once you've engaged, if they haven't delivered what they said they were going to deliver, then you can make a change. If you're not happy, you can go find another advisor. And I tell people all the time when they talk to me that we expect to demonstrate to your satisfaction that you're better off with us than without us. And if we can't do that to your satisfaction, you should fire my butt. That's what I would do. And I'm proud to tell you, and I have to knock on wood when I say this out loud, we rarely get fired. So clients are happy. But so in terms of choosing them, there are certain, I think, things that I would look for in an advisor. And at Wealth Enhancement, we've actually kind of tried to quantify what's the formula that makes for a good advisor. And it's not an exact science, but I think some of the things that people should look for, you know, are honesty and integrity. You know, it's okay to say, I don't know. I've done it many times on this radio show. I get a question I don't know the answer to, and I'm not embarrassed to say that, but if I don't know the answer, I know how to find it, where to go get it. I can look it up, and I can get that answer eventually, but I might not know at the moment. I don't need to try to fast-talk my way around not knowing something. It's okay to tell people that that they can interview multiple advisors before making a decision. So I think that there's things that, that can demonstrate your sincerity and your integrity. And again, it's hard to measure and it's hard to quantify, but people sometimes instinctively in the conversation will get a sense. Empathy is, the advisors seem empathetic. It's not just about, you know, technically correct answers, but do they seem to understand you? Can the advisor put themselves in your place? Can they walk in your shoes? That's something I really try to focus on, because I know that my financial situation and decisions that are good for me might be very, very different for my client, and I have to see the world through their eyes to be able to give them the right advice. I think good communication is important. I can't tell you, Susie, how many times over the years I've had somebody say to me, you know, that's the first time I ever understood that. Multiple people have tried to explain that to me before, and I never understood it. Now I understand it. So communication, being able to articulate something so the client understands what you're doing and why you're doing it, so they have clarity. And by the way, I tell clients all the time, that clarity probably isn't going to be permanent. If you don't work with this stuff every day like I do, you might understand when you walk out of the meeting, but a day later, a week later, a month later, you might forget and go, what did Bruce say about that again? That's one of the reasons we have review meetings. You come back in, we go over it again. Here's what we did last year. Or here's what we did 6 months ago. Here's why we did it. And then the second time you hear it, you'll retain it longer and the clarity will last longer. But you may need to repeat that to clients over and over and over again over the course of years. And this is an ongoing process that's never ending. But good communication skills. And then the big buzzword, you know, that everybody talks about today, Susie, is fiduciary. Does the advisor have a fiduciary responsibility to act in the client's best interest at all times? And, you know, Wealth Enhancement is a fiduciary. I tell people all the time, we were a fiduciary before it was cool to be a fiduciary. That's the only business model we've ever had since our inception. And it doesn't mean that if somebody doesn't have a fiduciary standard, because there are other standards in the industry, it doesn't necessarily mean they're not honest or they're not a good advisor, but it's just not a business model that we want at Wealth Enhancement. I would think most consumers looking for an advisor would want them to be a fiduciary. And also a big word, independent, that you want them to be able to give you independent advice and not have a vested interest into giving advice that might be good for them or their company, but they should be able to give independent advice. Now, the next thing we should probably talk about really quickly, and I know we've only got about 4 minutes or so left before we need to take a break, so I'll try to get through this so we can save the second half all for questions. But one of the big things is, how does your advisor get paid? Now, there's a lot of different ways an advisor can be paid, and there's no one right or wrong way. It can be what's called fee only. It can be a fee for assets under management, or the acronym is often used as AUM, where there's a percentage that the advisor charges based on the amount of assets that you have with them. And that's the old, you know, the advisor does better if you do better, because if they're taking a percentage of the money they're managing and your account gets bigger, they're taking in more money. So you're in the boat together. But it could also be an hourly fee. It can be commission. I'm going to come back to that one. It could be salary based. And I want to talk about commission just for a second. There's a firm that shall remain nameless, but they do a lot of commercials on sports events on TV. And I've seen their commercials where they suggest that if an advisor earns commission, that's somehow a conflict of the fiduciary responsibility. Well, I take issue with that, because sometimes at Wealth Enhancement, we earn a commission. But let me tell you why. So at Wealth Enhancement with Comprehensive Financial Planning, we will review and look at life insurance. And if we think you need life insurance, or if you want life insurance, we can sell that to you. Well, the business model for life insurance is a commission model. We didn't invent that. That's just the way it is in the industry. That's how we're compensated for the value-added advice that we hopefully bring to the client. But like I tell people all the time, if I recommend insurance and they say, yeah, I want to get that life insurance or whatever the insurance is, Wealth Enhancement is going to be compensated. But I tell them, look, if I told the insurance company, don't pay us, I don't want the commission, we don't need the money, we're doing fine, it's not going to change your cost of the insurance. It just means the life insurance company keeps more money. They're not going to change your premium. So the advisor's commission is not detrimental And it's not a conflict of interest in that the fact that we get paid doesn't undermine the advice. It doesn't undermine our fiduciary responsibility. In fact, I would suggest that someone that calls themselves a financial planner or a financial advisor that won't review your insurance, that won't help you determine if you have the appropriate amount or if you're paying too much or if you, you know, need to get more insurance, if they don't touch that at all, I would consider that a far greater conflict of the fiduciary responsibility than helping you get the right amount of insurance and then getting paid for it. So this idea that commission is somehow blasphemy, I just don't accept that. In fact, I'm looking at my clock, Susie, and I'm not going to be able to finish up before we go to break, but it won't take me long after the break to wrap up my thoughts on this and kind of put a bow on it, and then we'll definitely get listeners involved. But when we come back, I'll talk a little bit about some of the potential pitfalls or shortcomings of some of the other ways that an advisor can be paid, because again, people tend to focus on commission, but they all have an upside and a downside, which is why there's no right or wrong way to pay your advisor. And then I'll put a cap on it, and then we'll get listeners involved.
That sounds great. In the number, and if you're listening and we've already got some questions coming in, the number to ask Bruce a question, and we love you to call if you want to join us live on the air. That would be terrific as well. The number is 651-461-9226. Again, it is 651-461-9226. You can use that number to either text or call. Love to have you on the second half of Your Money. And welcome back to the second half of Your Money. I'm Susie Jones, along with Bruce Helmer, who is flying solo today with Peg off and about around the world, traveling and having fun. And we're talking about the best way to work with a financial advisor. Bruce, we've got some text and call. We have some text questions, but if you want to kind of recap and remind people, if you're just tuning in, if you have a question for Bruce, you can call 651-461-9226, or you can text that line. Bruce, do you want to recap? Did we miss anything we want to get to before we answer some questions?
Thank you, Susie Jones. I won't take a lot of time recapping, just a little bit, but there's a couple things I didn't get to, and then I'll kind of summarize the whole discussion today. And then, yes, we'll definitely have a lot of time for listeners' questions, texting or calling. If they want to hear their voice on the radio, that'd be great. I love live questions. So, you know, we talked about the fact that people that use an advisor do better than those that don't. And I said, don't take my word for it. There's ways to do your own research. Then we went into some specific ways that advisors add value. I'm not going to repeat all of those. But then we also talked about, you know, how do you choose an advisor? What are some of the things you look for? Integrity, honesty, good communication, are they a fiduciary, and so forth. And then we got into different ways that advisors are paid. And I spent a lot of time talking about commission because other advisors within our space, I know, have taken shots at me before because wealth enhancement sometimes earns a commission. And I gave the example that that's not a conflict to fiduciary responsibility. And I gave the example of life insurance. Over the years, Susie, we've helped a lot of people, including myself, get the most affordable life insurance possible, the best price for the best death benefit, the best value. We're completely independent. We can do market research and choose the right company and the right policy based on somebody's circumstances. But when we get paid for that, we earn a commission. But that doesn't violate our fiduciary obligation. And I suggested that people that don't do life insurance and criticize us for getting a commission for selling life insurance are more in violation, because if you're a comprehensive financial planner, certainly you would help clients understand their life insurance. And it goes beyond just life insurance also. There's a lot of things. But then I said, all the different ways that an advisor can be paid might have a pitfall or a shortcoming. So, for example, assets under management, which wealth enhancement also does, full disclosure, a lot of people like that because they say, well, I'm paying a percentage of the money that my advisor is managing for me, and so they do better if I do better. I don't have to worry about them having an incentive or an ulterior motive or looking out for their own best interest. Because if my portfolio value, if my account value increases, that's good for me, but it's also good for them. They make more money, the same percentage of a bigger number. So we're in this together. The advisor does better when I do better as a client. But the downside is I'm going to an advisor for objective advice. Are they going to look at anything I have and say, oh, well, you should move that, you know, to wealth enhancement? Every person, every prospective client that I review their finances, I don't look at everything they have and say, well, that's no good. You should move that to wealth enhancement. Because if I did that, I'd be violating my fiduciary obligation and my responsibilities. And it's not uncommon at all that I tell people, you should not move that. I like the investment. I think it's appropriate. Or maybe I don't love that investment, but there's some sort of detrimental impact, like account closing fees or taxes. There's some negative consequence if you reposition that money, and I don't think it's worth it. If I recommend repositioning the wealth enhancement, I should be able to give you a very compelling reason as to why it's in your best interest to do that. But the AUM fee can create an incentive for the advisor to move money to them and to their firm, because that's how they make their money. Yes, it's true, they do better if you do better, but they still have the potential conflict of lack of objectivity, because the way they're compensated is by having assets under management. And again, we do that also. Hourly fees can encourage additional billable hours. A flat fee can encourage limiting time with you. If they're paying, if they get a flat fee, they might want to spend less time with you because they're not making any more money. If they spend more time with you, it might negatively impact your service. Or if there's some kind of bonus compensation for the advisor, that can reflect, you know, company being more concerned about their profits and less about the client. So when people emphasize or focus that commission is a bad way to pay an advisor, I would suggest that any way an advisor gets compensated, there is a potential pitfall or shortcoming. But I come back to the way I started the show. At the end of the day, the advisor should be able to demonstrate to your satisfaction that you're better off with that advisor than without them. Now, sometimes, Susie and listeners, it's quantifiable. I can think of multiple times in my career when I've been able to show a client, look, this strategy saved you X amount of dollars in income taxes right out of the gate, and that's a quantifiable number. Yeah, I that's great. I wouldn't have saved those taxes if not for you showing me that. But most of the time, it's not. It's people saying, I sleep better at night. Or it's people saying, I don't worry so much, I'm more relaxed. Or it's people saying, I have the time to pursue the things I really want to pursue. We're traveling, we're pursuing our hobbies, we're playing golf, we're fishing, we're hunting, we're spending time with our grandkids. Those things, you can't quantify the value, but I know it's there because clients tell me that all the time. So an advisor should make your life better, should add value net of cost. And if you don't think they are, if they can't demonstrate that, then you should find a different advisor. Now, finally, I'm going to close with this. If there's certain things I think you should ask an advisor, again, assuming I've convinced some people today to maybe that don't have an advisor to consider it, some questions I would ask are, what services do you provide? Are you just a money manager, which is fine, doesn't mean that's wrong, or do you do comprehensive planning? Are you a fiduciary? Will you always put my interests first? Are there additional fees or expenses that I have to pay other than the ones that we've talked about? The fees should be very transparent. What potential conflicts of interest does your business model maybe have with serving my needs? Do you have experience of people in my situation? How do we measure if this relationship is successful? So there's a lot of really good questions. And the final thought, a good advisor does not necessarily eliminate all uncertainty. Some people are still going to be nervous, and I get that. And an advisor can't guarantee any specific return, but what they can do is help you to create a thoughtful plan, understand your choices, stay disciplined, make decisions that impact your life. And Susie, I'm proud to tell you, and this is my last thought, I don't know the exact percentage, but my associate advisor, Nicole Levinsky, and I just realized recently, as we sit in review meetings with clients that have been retired for years, when they retired, the biggest concern was, having enough money. They didn't want to run out of money before they run out of breath. And we did forecasting and cash flow analysis and projections to be able to say with certain confidence that that wasn't going to happen. But now we're sitting in these review meetings years after retirement, years and years after retirement, and people are living the lives they want. They're having fun. They're spending money. And their net worth has actually gone up. We're looking at what they started with us when they retired, and they actually have a lot more money now, and that is the vast majority of our clients. I can't say the exact percentage, but I can absolutely say it's the vast majority. And that gives me such a feeling of happiness, warmth, and satisfaction. Nicole and I were just talking about it this week. It's why we do what we do. It's why we love what we do, and we love having happy clients walking out of the office with a big smile on their face because they're living the retirement life they want, and they've got more money now than they did when they retired. So, again, nobody should take my word for any of this, but there's ways to research it. Do your research, and lastly, I would say this. Think of financially successful people, not necessarily somebody you know personally, but just financially successful people that you hear about in the media and whatnot, and ask yourself, do they do all this by themselves? And the answer is no, of course they don't. Some of them have teams of financial people working for them. So if the smartest, wealthiest, richest people in the world don't do this alone, why do you think you should be able to do this alone? Almost everybody will benefit from the help of a good, competent financial professional that's a fiduciary. I'll get off my soapbox and leave the rest of the time for questions from listeners. Thank you.
All right, 651-461-9226. If you have a question for Bruce, a texter writes, "Hi, Susie and Bruce. My kids are in their 30s, and I want to help them line up with a financial planner. Any advice for finding a planner that will work for people at this phase of their life?" I think that's important. 30s, you know, you think is young, but is it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And part of the question that they're referencing is there's a lot of advisors, and this is not necessarily make the advisors bad people, but they'll have an account minimum. They might say, you know, I don't want to talk to anybody unless they have $1 million or some other number. And it doesn't make them greedy. It doesn't make them selfish. It might just mean that their business model, their overhead, or you know, their cost of doing business, they have to have certain margins to make the business make sense. And it might not make sense for them economically to take on smaller clients. But I think the starting point probably for most people is a reference or a referral. Do you have a friend, a family member, a coworker, a neighbor, somebody that has had a good experience with a financial advisor and they recommend that person to you? That might be a good starting point for most people. I think most advisors, even if they say they have an account size minimum, if they have a good client, so let's say it's an advisor, you know, that works for ABC company, and ABC company has a big minimum, and they have clients that are over that minimum, but now they have adult children that aren't. Most, I think, ABC company and most advisors, I think, will still take on the kids or the fruit of the tree of the previous generation. In fact, you know, I really always want to work with kids of clients because if we have that continuity when mom and dad have health issues or mom and dad pass away, the transition to the next generation is a lot easier if they're already clients of mine and I'm already working with them. So I think you can definitely find people out there that will work with young people. And, you know, I'm old now. I actually talked about this last week. I'm old and I have to convince people they don't have to be afraid of working with me because I'm old. You know, what if I hire you and you retire the next day? I'm not retiring anytime soon. I've got my successor advisor already in place. She's been with me 20 years. But to the point of, you know, I remember not so long ago, it was the opposite. I was young and I had to convince people I was trustworthy and credible and smart enough and I was going to be in the business long enough. Well, it's the same way with clients. You know, we were all 30-something some at one point in our lives. None of us or most of us didn't start out wealthy. We got more assets as we got older, as we worked, as we planned, as we saved. So I think it would be unfortunate, you know, if there's advisors that don't want to take on a 30-something-year-old just because they don't have enough money. And I don't think it's that hard to find an advisor that would do that, that would want a 30-something-year-old and grow with them. Now, it might be that the advisor they find is a younger, less experienced advisor. And that might be a good thing. They might have more in common, more synergy. A 30-something-year-old client might want to work with a 30-something-year-old advisor. That's logical in a lot of ways. They see the world in a very synergistic way. So I think it's doable. I think your 30-something-year-olds will be able to find somebody.
All right, 651-461-9226. A texter wonders, along these lines, does it make a difference if a person has a net worth of $5,000 or $5 million in order to receive services from Wealth Enhancement? Do you have a minimum, or do you take anybody?
Yeah, so as a firm, Wealth Enhancement will work with anybody that wants our help. But there are any number of advisors that do have minimums. And again, it doesn't make any of them bad people or me bad person. It just it makes sense in our business model. But we will take on anybody. But you, let's say somebody wants to work with Bruce Helmer or Peg Webb and they don't have a lot in assets. Peg and I might not be the right advisor for you, but we'll find someone that is as a firm. And again, it's probably going to be a more junior advisor with less experience. But I would also tell you this, and I'm not blowing smoke here, and I have clients that have, for a lot of different reasons, I have clients that don't have a high net worth. And I can absolutely tell you that they get the same level of service, they get the same number of reviews, they get the same number, the same amount of consideration. We our goal is to always delight every client and to exceed client expectations, and it doesn't matter if you have $5 million or $5,000, we try to treat everybody equally. Now, that said, it's also a reality that more money probably almost certainly does lead to more planning opportunities. So we might talk to that $5 million client more often, not because we're trying to, you know, to butt kiss, but just because there's more opportunity or potential to do things because of that greater net worth. The person with $5,000, there might not be a lot of different things we can do. It's not that we're treating one better than the other. It's just that the situations are very different. But every client, regardless of how much money they have, we will always try to do our absolute best for them. And yes, as a firm, we don't have minimums. We will take on anybody that legitimately wants our help, but it might be a more junior advisor, to be completely candid.
651-461-9226. If you have a financial question for Bruce Helmer, this texter writes, I'm 75 years old and all my advisor does is pull out my monthly dollars for my spending. Should I get an advisor?
You know, again, and without knowing how the relationship was established and what commitments or promises they made to you, you know, they might not be fulfilling what you wanted them to fulfill, but then you have to be able to communicate that. Maybe this advisor doesn't know that you're looking for more. You know, I mentioned communication earlier in the show, but that's a two-way street. It's not just the advisor communicating with the client. But the client has to tell the advisor, look, here's what I want from you. Here's what I expect from you. And if I can't get that, I'm going to go somewhere else. So if you haven't communicated that, I would. If you communicate that and they still don't deliver anything else, then, yeah, I would maybe go look for another advisor. But I would also say that advisor that's helping you take the money out for your retirement income, if they're helping you with what I call retirement income planning, in other words, you've got multiple places where that income could come from, and they're helping you make sure that you're spending the appropriate money first. That is a value-added service because not all money is treated equally. It can be, you know, it can be taxed differently depending upon whether you take it out of a tax-deferred plan or a Roth IRA where there is no taxes, or if it's what we call non-qualified money where there is no tax deferral or tax-free treatment. You just get a 1099 every year. So spending the right money first or the appropriate money and doing that efficiently can certainly enhance how long your money lasts and enhance your overall retirement efficiency and your income. So even if that's the only thing they're doing, if they're doing that and doing it well, they might be value added in a big way. But if you're looking for more and you expect more, you have to communicate that to the advisor.
651-461-9226. This texter writes, wealth enhancement has grown over the years. What do you look for when acquiring additional firms or advisors to your company?
Also a good question, and that didn't go where I thought it was going to go. So let me first go where I thought it was going to go. And this comes up a lot. When we started Wealth Enhancement, we had 7 employees. The whole company met at a conference room table or a round table every Wednesday, and I bought pizza. And today, Wealth Enhancement is in, 40 states. There's thousands of employees. It has grown. It's exceeded even my wildest dreams and expectations, and I had pretty big goals when we started. But where I thought the question was going to go is, when you become that big, do your clients just become a number? Part of the reason I was attracted to Wealth Enhancement is the personalized service, the authenticity, the relationship. And I can honestly tell you that hasn't gone away even though we're bigger. And part of the reason is the model. You know, every advisory team within Wealth Enhancement is almost like a mini company within the bigger company. And each advisor knows their clients. Now, in the Eden Prairie office where I am, there's other advisors, Steve Hess and Mike Bishop. I don't know their clients. They might know me. Sometimes they might see me in the lobby and say, hey, you're Bruce Elmer. But I know my clients. Now, again, full disclosure, I might run into a client in the grocery store and I recognize the face, but I might not be able to pull up their name right away, but I'll probably recognize their face. And so you are still a person. You're not a number. We still do, even though we've grown tremendously, we still have that personal service. In terms of where the question actually went, when we acquire advisors or merge with advisors, it's got to be a good synergistic fit. We're looking for people that share our philosophy, that put the client first, that want to delight clients, exceed client expectations, that want to do comprehensive planning. There's a lot of people in the industry that would like to come here, but if all they are is, a portfolio manager or a mutual fund salesman, they don't do planning, they don't want to do planning, that is not a good fit. It doesn't mean they don't have a reasonable business model and that they can't help people, but it's just not a philosophy or a way of doing business that we would be looking for. And the other thing I would say is that any advisor that's at Wealth Enhancement, and again, this all sounds very self-serving, I apologize for that, but I think it's a fair answer to the question. The people that we recruit, the firms that we recruit, these are superstars in the industry, and they could be anywhere. If they're not a superstar, we're probably not interested. So we've got phenomenal people and that could be anywhere they want, and they choose to be at Wealth Enhancement. But it really starts more than anything else with a philosophy that's consistent with ours to do comprehensive planning, to always put the client first, to delight the client, to exceed client expectations, do the best job we can. That's how the process starts. And then obviously there's some sort of financial negotiations that go into it to determine value of the company and whatnot. But it's absolutely a fair question, and I'm glad the texter asked it.
And this is a nice one. Jeff, this texter writes, the Jeff Hocker team with Wealth Enhancement helped our family with our finances and welfare 17 years ago when my husband was diagnosed with terminal cancer. Jeff's team was there for us during the difficult time and cared for the welfare of our family. Really just a big thanks to you. And I think that gets to some of your point about that personal touch.
Yeah, and I don't know if Jeff's listening today or not, but I'll mention to him that somebody texted that in. It'll make him happy.
Yeah. And, you know, we only have about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts before we say goodbye until next week?
Well, again, just really quickly, and to anyone that says, well, yeah, Helmer, you can't be objective. You're a financial advisor. That's fair. Do your own homework. There's a mountain of information out there on the internet. A lot of smart people that are independent, that aren't financial advisors, have done the research and validated that people that use an advisor will do better than those that don't almost all the time.
All right, Bruce, thanks for talking. Thanks for the great information. If you did not get your question answered, you can do so by emailing it at yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com, yourmoney@wealthenhancement.com, or call 1-888-6-ADVICE.